The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jimmy, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is Footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
B2N. Talk.
And we are recording. BetMGM, the player. Speaking of being a great broadcaster.
Start again.
You do it. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Footy Prime. A guest today, someone that we've been hoping to get on for some time. I'm just a terrible organizer. It comes down to that, really. But if you're from Canada, as most of you are, and have spent any time at all watching or listening to CBC, you know our guest today, a broadcasting legend, both in sports and actual real important journalism, is Tom Harrington. Tom, welcome to Footy Prime.
Morning, gents. Nice to be with you all.
We're happy to have you. And listen, for those that don't know, Tom's covered it all, but Tom is one of us, right? He is a real live soccer fan. He loves Canada. He loves Liverpool, which is, it didn't hurt his appearance here, that's for sure. We got him on here. He is actually over in Europe recently for a proper road trip with the boys. Let's start with that, can we? First of all, sure. Before we get to the important stuff. How many games did you get in? What was the planning? How much fun was it?
Oh, that's a lot. Well, just for background, this is a group of guys from my neighborhood, some of whom have moved away, but we're still in contact. We're still buddies. And we started doing this in 2009, actually. We went to see Chelsea and Bolton at Stamford Bridge, and that was the first game we saw. And then we saw Derby County and Wolves in Derby County on the other trip, on the same trip, but that was the other game. So that was 2009. We did it again in 2011, 2014, 2016, 2018, 2023, and then this past April. So this was our seventh trip. Biggest group, six of us all together. Coordinating travel. I picked the place. I was the accommodations guy. I found us a place to stay and then figuring out what matches we could see and how to get tickets. So we identified four matches that we were going to go to see, and we were successful in getting to all of them. So we were at City and Arsenal at the Etihad for the big game. And then on the Monday, we saw Palace and West Ham at Selhurst Park. On Tuesday, we saw Swansea at QPR at Loftus Road. And on Wednesday, we saw Charlton Athletic in the Valley against Ipswich, who earned promotion and were really good. That, by the way, that park, the Valley, they've rebuilt they basically built on the same spot, but upgraded the whole entire stadium. And we all agreed if we were living in London and wanted to be season ticket holders, that's where we would go. Seats about 25,000. It is a beautiful ground, just wonderful. So we saw four matches in 4 days. We had a couple of days on the ground beforehand. So I was gone almost a week, but it was just a blast. We twack around London in the daytime and then go to matches in the evening. And you know what? We did the tickets. People think, oh my gosh, it must be expensive. Well, the tickets to Charlton were probably like $70 Canadian, and we had good seats. Loftus Road, they were probably like $60 Canadian, and we had good seats. Crystal Palace was more expensive. I went through the off market for those. They were a bit more expensive, and that's a really odd ground. There's a ridge or a platform, a terrace above the main terrace. So where we were sitting, me and the guy I was with, we had two seats, and we were looking, and we just see the far sideline, just the line. And we were standing because everybody stands at Selhurst Park. I didn't know that. Everybody stands all game long. And I'm not young anymore. Standing for like 2 hours is not easy. But anyway, the atmosphere was great. The atmosphere in all the parks was great. The Etihad, the game with Arsenal was fabulous. Just a tremendous atmosphere and a real sense of occasion. So that was the trip. Yeah.
What did you think was the best atmosphere?
Greg, I would say, I don't know. I would probably say actually Charlton. It was really, really amazing, the noise they generated in that size of park. But to be fair, you know, in Man City, an Etihad is kind of known as the empty hat, right? It's kind of half empty, or at least there are not a lot of people there. They're not very vocal. This was a big game. You just get the sense. It's like going to a prize fight in boxing. As soon as you walked in there, you had a sense something big was happening. And they were the City fans, to their credit, were roaring the whole game. They were really loud. The Shed End there, which I was sitting fairly close to, was really loud. And it's funny, you know, it's there's such a rich club. And I was sitting next to I was at the end of a row of six seats. And the fellow next to me was a taxi driver in Manchester. He'd been a season ticket holder for City for more than 30 years, right? I'm going... First of all, I didn't say this to him. I said, how the hell do you afford that at a cab driver salary? My guess is he's probably been grandfathered in on lower seats. Like I think they treat longtime fans differently because there were people, we were surrounded by tourists like us. There were people from Germany, Switzerland, Norway, who were sitting all around us who traveled for the game. So, but it was fun to sit next to a longtime fan. And of course, he was thrilled when they won the match. It was this great scene, by the way. After they won 2-1 and Pep was walking around the field. I don't know if you remember watching on TV. He walked around the field for 5 minutes, applauding the fans, hugging the players. He's not normally like that. It was, I recorded some video of it actually, but at one of the stadium, at the end of the stadium I was at, the fans unfurl this banner and a massive banner and it rolls out and it says panic in the streets of London.
I've never seen that.
Yeah.
So on, did you do the match day experience, go to the local pubs and then walk over to the stadium with the crowds?
We did. So on the City game, we had a deal they call a hospitality deal, which means basically you get a nice fancy lunch and then you pay for your tickets, which were expensive. I won't say how much, but that was nice. But for the other matches, we went to local pubs. In fact, one that we had to show your ticket to get in. And we just hang out with the locals. And they're all curious, a bunch of Canucks showing up to watch football in England. And which is always part of the fun. We've done that so often and on these trips. And that's why we go. We go because we love watching and just immersing ourselves in football culture in England. It's just so different than anything else. I try to explain to people over here. It's, you know, people think, you know, I worked in Montreal for over 10 years and covered the Canadians. And it's the closest thing in sports outside England to English football is the Montreal Canadians. And it's not even in the same atmosphere, but everybody eats and drinks football for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you go to the pubs and they're always commiserating and the TVs are on and it's just the vibe is just fantastic. And then the other thing I love about the British fans is they're hilarious. I mean, you're in the match and you burst out laughing as they'll say something, they'll have a chant going you've never heard before. I gotta tell you this story if I could. So we in 2011 we saw Stoke and Aston Villa at Villa Park. And we got I got the tickets through Asmir Begovic, who was backup for Stoke at the time. And I'd done a story on him for the under 20 World Cup. So we stayed in contact. So he arranged for tickets for, there were only three of us on that trip. So we ended up sitting in the family section behind Kenwyn Jones's wife and kids.
Kenwyn Jones.
My old teammate.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That's right. So Jones, he had been signed from Sunderland, the biggest transfer in the history of Stoke at that time, right? So in the first half, the fans, like thousands, start singing this song. And I'm going to do my best, but you've got to hear this. So Steve Bruce was the manager of Sunderland at the time. And Steve Bruce was known anatomically for something particular. So they go, Kenwyn Jones is Stokey. He comes from Trinidad. His hair's like Whoopi Goldberg. We think he's fucking mad. And when he came from Sunderland, this is what he said. Steve Bruce is a wanker with a bit fat fucking head. They sang that over and over and over again, and we were killing ourselves every time they sang it. We burst out laughing. It was just hilarious. Anyway, that's one of the reasons we love going to England to watch games and stuff like that.
Well, what is the difference? I mean, is it because these clubs are so community based and that you don't have to have, so to speak, a major league team? You can have low division teams, like you mentioned Charlton, you know, a league championship team with right. An amazing stadium, 25,000 fans. Is that the reason, that the difference between that and North America?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of that. I mean, we actually saw games at Dagenham. We saw Dagenham and Plymouth play. We saw Leighton Orient and Wrexham play before Ryan Reynolds took over. So we've seen small clubs, and we've seen Arsenal at the Emirates, and you know, we've seen big games too. So that's a tough one, James. You probably know better than me, but it strikes me as much like being a sports fan in North America, although it's deeper than that. It's familial. It's tribal, right? It's your father's club, your grandfather's club, it's your uncle's club. It's like living in Liverpool and being an Everton or Liverpool fan, right? The door in your house may be red or maybe blue. It's like, that's kind of the passion and it's deep seated. Some people don't like it because it's that way, but most of it's good, in my opinion. I think that the upside of that kind of fan support is much better than the worst side of it. They are tough fans. All English football fans are hard on their teams, but they love them so deeply, and they never change. Like you talk to people in North America and say, "Yeah, I used to cheer for the Yankees, but now I'm a Mets fan or something." Right? So, these people would never consider ever changing loyalties. I've never run across an English football fan who has like three favorite teams. Nobody does that. They all have their team, and they may have a team in the Premier League that they may like, but their local club, like you said, their smaller club, League One, League Two, it's where they go. It's where they hang out with their buds. They have a pint before and they talk about the match afterwards. It's still bread on the bone, and that's very different, I believe, than North American sports. It's comparable on the continent, I think, and certainly when I was at the World Cup in 2010, and nationally, of course, it's like that too. The passion for your own country.
It's funny, I didn't realize Tom was taking today to launch his new business, but we'll promote it. It's the Tom Harrington Footy Road Trips. And you can just call in. We're going to leave your phone number on the end, your email. Tom, you've had, I just want to tell a little story. I've always watched your career because I was in Montreal when were in Montreal. Yeah. And if I remember correctly, you used to call some McGill Redbirds games. You would have called my games at 86, 87, 88.
No, come on.
I was on the field at McGill Stadium at Molson.
I was a PA announcer for the Redmen for like 5 years. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was back then, I was known as Danny Wong, and I was playing defensive back, kickoff, punt returner.
I know the name Danny. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Yeah,
well, don't be doing that, Tom.
No, seriously, I do.
You'll never let us forget it.
That was a good team. Yeah. That was Mike Soles' team.
Yeah. That's Mike and Jerry Eiffel and all the crazy dogs at the time. But it was the reason I also, because of that, I had an affiliation to watch you and see where your career was going. And I actually listened to you sign off on your last day on CBC too.
Yeah.
So I just want to say I was there at the beginning. I was there at the end. And I think this football road trip business, you should give me a call. We'll entrepreneur it up. And then all of a sudden, Footy Prime could be involved.
There you go.
I'm just throwing. I'm blue skying right now.
I appreciate that, Danny. That's good memories, man. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, boy. That's great, though. It is. I mean, and now we've got some evidence that Dan did play football. He tells us all the time, but we never really believe him.
And if you wondered how long I've been covering soccer, this is a autographed ball from the Montreal Impact when they won the ASL in 1994. And they gave it to me as a gift because I left Montreal in 1994 to move to Toronto. But in my 10 or so years in Montreal, I covered soccer all the time. I did all kinds of stories on the games, on the Impact, on the Supra. There's another name for you. Mm-hmm. Pat Harrington was the goalkeeper. No relation, but I did stories on him. Alex Bunbury, when he showed up, there's a lot of good talent, actually. Valerio Gazzola was the manager back then. Eddie Fermani, there's a legendary name in football. He was the manager of the Impact in 1993. I did a profile on him when I was at CBC Montreal. So I did a lot of stuff on the sport when I was working as just a local sportscaster. So that's why I'm really glad to see the podcast like this thriving and seeing the sport doing so well, because I felt like I was in the wilderness back in the 80s doing stories on football and soccer in Canada because nobody gave a crap, to be honest. And I just didn't get it. I used to say to people when the World Cup was on, and they go, "What's the big deal?" And I go, "Really? I have to explain this to you?" It's like the world's having a massive party, and you're outside, and you're rubbing the window looking in, saying, "Gee, that looks like fun. I wish we could be there," you know. And I waited for years. I mean, we were there in '86, obviously, but that was kind of out of the blue, a lightning in a bottle kind of thing. But to see the program progress, to see us qualify in 2022, and I was at the game in March 2022, freezing my ass off when Canada beat Jamaica. And I tell you, man, I almost had tears in my eyes. I said, I never thought this was going to happen. And I was so thrilled that the team made it. And I, my opinion, did pretty well. And I think they're going to make some noise this time, too.
Yeah, that was a moment. Craig had tears in his eyes. Live on TV, if you remember. That was an amazing moment.
Yeah.
You mentioned the media and how it's changed from those days, this little backwater of a sport and how it's grown. Do you think it's the media's job to build a sport and a brand? Because sometimes it feels like the associations expect that of the media. I don't think that should be the case necessarily.
Well, if they do that, they're wrong. They can't have that expectation. You want to play in the big leagues, you have to be big league and act big league and perform big league, and not only on the pitch, but outside the pitch in terms of an organization and the kind of the message you send and the way you portray yourself to the community. So no, the media doesn't owe you anything. The flip side of that is the media could do a better job and is doing a better job, I will say, of understanding the game and appreciating the game. But when I was doing soccer in the 80s, doing those local stories, and even in the 90s, there were a few guys who knew the sport, Neil Davidson and others who were covering the sport for a long time, really appreciated the importance of the sport and how Canada needed to belong to that community. But most other people, particularly the broadcast side, really didn't have a clue. And when you have people, when you have reporters who don't know, they're not willing to say they don't know. That's there's sort of this weird professional pride. You know, saying I don't know is like, you don't say that when you're a journalist, but that's how you learn and that's how you get better. So I think it's better now. The difficulty is, and this is old news, but you know, in England, you know, soccer dominates, football dominates the media for obvious reasons. It's the biggest sport there by a long shot. I mean, cricket's big, rugby's big, but nothing rivals football. Here, you've got five major sports basically to deal with. And so you're competing for airtime and print space and sponsorship dollars and ticket sales and things like that. It's really hard to push into that. And what I think is remarkable and is maybe not as reported as much as it should is that, you know, soccer is basically replacing hockey as the fourth sport in North America in terms of audience size, in terms of ticket sales. MLS is doing really well, it's been boosted by a subculture and now more popular culture of soccer talk like this, like Men in Blazers. I started listening to that podcast about 8 years ago. I was actually mentioned on there a few times because Roger Bennett and I, we used to communicate on Twitter. It was all about Premier League back then. They morphed into this gigantic monstrosity of a media corporation now, but back then it was just football. And it was fun and interesting and informative. And, you know, I learned a lot, but also was really entertained. And so that has boosted the sport in the U.S., just that one podcast. So, you know, the sport's really, like, what you guys have been doing and are doing, continue to do, is, I think, super important, because I'm a big believer in trying to build a sport from the ground up. And even back in the 80s when I was doing it was one of those stats that people said, really? And I said, you know, there are more kids playing minor soccer than minor hockey, even then? And they say, really? I said, yeah. And one of the reasons is, I have a grandson who's two, it's safer and it's cheaper. And I want my grandson to play soccer, not hockey. It's a sport. And I also like soccer because it's more democratic. It's like you can be tall or short, you can be thick or thin, you can be fast or not really fast. You can, you know, you can play, you can be from the rich you can be the suburbs and the rich areas, from the sandlots and the favelas and all that. You can still have a career, even be in the World Cup. And there are very few sports like that in the world. That's what one of the things that makes soccer great.
Yeah, great points. But we are always, it seems, you know, trying to break through this wall, this invisible wall here in Canada to get that exposure.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it a fear, do you think, of the traditional sports, Canadian sports? You know, who are these outliers coming in and trying to take it? Even though soccer's been here for a very long time now, there's a lot of pushback, especially in the networks.
Oh.
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, there's never been more soccer on TV than there is now. I mean, the idea of being able to see a Premier League game every weekend, and I'm with my iPad having my coffee, sitting with my grandson watching the Premier League on Saturday morning. You couldn't do that 10 or 12 years ago or more. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, I used to watch the FA Cup final on tape delay on CBC 1 week after the game was played, because that's all you got to see. I fell in love with soccer because of Johan Cruyff back in the 70s, and I only saw him play twice, in the World Cup semifinal and the final on CBC, no less. So now you can see all that stuff all the time, and in multiple leagues. There was Albanian soccer on the Rogers stream the other day, right? So I mean, it's astonishing how much is out there. So I think by sheer volume, the number of kids being exposed to it, how often do you walk around Toronto and see kids wearing, you know, Premier League kits or Barcelona kits, Real Madrid kits, that sort of thing. You never saw that 20 years ago. You see it all the time now, more than you see maybe a Leafs jersey or a Jays jersey, or at least as much. So I think the appetite is there. And I think the challenge for the traditional networks has always been, stepping out of their so-called comfort zone to show more football, because people do want to watch. I mean, I just saw the One Soccer, I think, got the license to broadcast over the air or something like that.
It seems that way.
So, I mean, things like that, those little that thin edge of the wedge gets the opportunity to get more of that stuff to more people. And so doing, like, the people on the outside kind of battling through, that you're doing God's work. You know, that's how the sport gets bigger, gets more support, right? Really important.
Yeah. How do you think the World Cup is going to impact our media and also impact the country as a whole? I mean, I'm sort of sitting on the fence a little bit about, you know, we've had some events in Canada. We've had some big events back in 2002 with the Women's Under 19 Women's World Cup, 2007 Under 20 Men's World Cup.
Right.
2015 Bull Women's World Cup. And all those were important to make certain steps. I don't know if this World Cup is going to make a massive jump, but I think it will be in a positive way. I just don't know how big. What is your opinion on that?
Yeah, it's a good one, Craig. I'm of two minds about it as well. You know, people are asking me, do you think the World Cup will make soccer more popular in Canada? So it will be. It is popular in Canada. It's not in the wilderness anymore. It's in the mainstream. Right. I think everybody should realize soccer is part of the mainstream sports culture of the country. People say, is it going to help Canada put a Canada on the world map? I said, well, the Olympics did that twice. So, you know, the fact that there are six games in here and six games in Vancouver, sure, that's great exposure for those cities. It's like most people in the world kind of know where those cities are, I think. I think what will be interesting is when people see Canada loving the game, like when the world sees our country watching it like they watch it, which I think they will. So when you'll see 40,000 people at BMO, or so we think, for the games here and same in BC. I'm assuming the place will be full. I was at the Messi game, the Miami game, and it was, you know, pretty full. And it was great. The vibe was fantastic. With that 40,000 plus in that stadium was pretty cool. So seeing that on TV in other parts of the country, parts of the world, will, I think, at least send a message that we know it's the World Cup in Canada. Like, there's a Zlatan Ibrahimovic is an ad right now. He's going, Canada hosting the World Cup. That doesn't sound great. So, whatever. You know, so yeah. People got to get past that. Sure, why can't we host the World Cup? We have a really good, first of all, we have a really good team and a system that's finally caught up to the world, or just catching up to the world, who's producing players and getting them the opportunities to play, say, in Europe or in North America. So I think from an economic standpoint, I'm really doubtful that it's going to have a positive impact on Toronto. I think, you know, I've been talking to people who reserved hotel rooms to stay in Toronto the night before the game they're going to see, rather than trying to schlep down by train or by car the day of. That's smart. But there will be tourists here. People are going to come. You'll see people around the city you've never seen before, who'll be gaping at the CN Tower and all that. And that's all good. I don't think Toronto needs any particular attention on that score. But Toronto's a pretty well worldwide known city. So is Vancouver. So in terms of the game, the sport itself, I don't think it's necessarily going to push in enrollment of soccer programs. Why would it? I mean, those programs are already heaving with kids signing up and that. What bothered me a little bit, and it's going back to what we talked about earlier, is that this is like the World Cup is a massive event. Like I was in South Africa for a month. And you felt like there was nowhere else in the world, A, you'd want to be, and it's the only place in the world everybody else wanted to be. It's the biggest sport on the planet. And even though we're only part of it, it's still massive. And I just don't think people have that feeling yet. Mm-hmm. And I hope they get it, because once the tournament starts, and it's in the U.S. and Mexico too, it's weird. But we've had multiple, you know, multi-headed events in the European Championships, things like that. So it's been done before. I just hope, you know, Torontonians and Vancouverites and Canadians get on board with the idea that this is bigger than the Olympics. I've been to 8 Olympic Games. Trust me, those Olympics are great, but the World Cup is different. It's just not the same. Nobody in Brazil watches ice hockey. Sorry. You know, nobody in Bangladesh watches swimming. Like the only countries in the world they really want to watch anything, and they watch football. That's the only sport. That changes everything. That's why you can go to any country in the world and talk about the weather and soccer. The two things you can talk about as a foreigner is the weather and football, right? You can't do anything else, but football you can. And I just hope this city and this country feels that way about it, because I do. I'm not going to a game. I have my opportunities to buy tickets. I'm not paying that kind of money. Forget about it. Mm-hmm. I got to go to a World Cup, so I'm good. But I do hope the city gets excited by it, because when you walk around the town, as you guys know, when you walk around the city during a World Cup or a Euro or whatever, every pub, depending where you're from, is full of people, and they're committed, they're yakking, and they're wearing their colors and all that. And people saying, well, you're in Canada. I said, yeah, but Canada lets people be who they are. So if you want to support Italy, you'd support Italy. You'd support Japan, you'd support Japan. Right. Mm-hmm. That buzz, I hope, will be there because it's literally living with us for a couple of weeks. And that's really cool. I just hope we get that buzz.
Tom, I want to put you on the spot just before you leave. A couple shows ago, we asked on our really big World Cup question, who will be the household name for the Canada men's national team once this World Cup is over? One player that all of a sudden is in the Canadian sporting world zeitgeist, not just soccer world, because we know we live in a weird bubble. And you do too, because you know shit that all our fans who listen and supporters, they'll all know the references, but not everyone does.
Sure.
So in your non-bubble head, who will be that player? I had to put it in context. Sorry.
That's a toughie. Wow.
It is.
I'll go out on a limb, and I'm going to say Ismaël Koné. I've been following him for a while. I actually saw him play for Hull City at a match three years ago. For Ipswich at the time against Hull City. And he didn't have a great game, but I just loved the way he moved and saw the game. And I know he's been through some ups and downs since then. That was 3 years ago now. I just think he's really talented. And he's the kind of player who, you know, he's not like people say, well, he's not a goal scorer. I said, no, but he's a thinker. Like I love the midfield player. I love the guys, the quarterback, who sort of sees the, I used to be a goalkeeper, but I love playing goal. I think Maxime Crépeau, for example, could be a household name, but I'm going to go with Koné. I just think he's got something special.
It's a great pick. Yeah, absolutely. He's the one with one of the highest ceilings for sure on that team and could get a very big move post-World Cup after. Right. Having a strong World Cup. Listen, Tom, we could talk for a long time. We'll get you back on for sure if you're open to it. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Really, really enjoyed it.
Really great, guys. Good to talk to you all. Enjoy the World Cup.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. Thanks, likewise. Tom. That is Tom Branson. Buddy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Until next time, everyone. Cheers very much for listening.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com to sign up for our newsletter.
Tom, that was great. Thank you. We could go on a lot longer, but that was great perspective.
Yeah, that was awesome. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, it was great.
My pleasure, guys. Yeah.
Hey, Tom, we think we're dropping this on Friday.